Hi, Hank.
Hi, Otto.
Hank, we have been talking within this context of Martha Musics about the Merkabah process. In the previous session, you explained how the Merkabah breathing is done. You connected that to the Iceman breathing, and you connected that to the holotropic circular breathing. And we came into that because, of course, in singing, breathing is essential. For those who want to hear the details of what you told then, we have the recording of the previous session. And for now, I'd like to ask you to continue the trail that you entered into the last time, because the previous session was about circular breathing and how in the circular breathing, basically, we activate the electromagnetic system, essentially. We shift the relationship between the electric and the magnetic, between the power and the information. And as a result, it is possible to shift from being reflex driven, which would be related to a very short cycle span, a very small circulation, to a freedom of choice activation, which automatically comes into the picture in the larger circle, the larger circulation. Having more space within. Again, this was already discussed in the previous session. But at the end of that previous session, we came to the counterpart of that story, because in the body we have that whole electromagnetic system with the electromagnetic circulation, which we can associate with the organ cycles. The circularity of the cycles of the cells and so on. But in our body, we do not only have this organ system, which is a replication of the seasons in the year for the planet, because in that sense, the animal system or the organic system in our body is the incorporation of the cycle of the year around the tree, while at a deeper level, we see that we have the vegetative system, which is plant-like, which is also fractal, and which in the electromagnetic system we can see as the time fractal, as it was called by Susie Froebel, or we could also call it, compare it to the lightning system, which we can see in the skies, and which evidently was taking place as the system for charge-discharge after the universe started to be created. This is then called the Van Oort gas cloud, basically an immense universal size electromagnetic thundercloud filling the whole of the universe. And evidently, when there are charge differences, there will be charge discharges, which will be in the shape of the lightning. And then that's where the South American system calls that Quetzalcoatl, the feathered snake, the lightning snake, or the fractal form. And it is that fractal form which we then see in our body as our vegetative system. So where the previous time we were talking about the animal system and the circulation of the electromagnetic flows in our body, which has also been extensively described by, for example, people like Bjørn Nordenstrøm, then now we are going to talk about this fractal charge discharge, the vegetative system, and that is a linear system of flow within our body, and that is typically associated with what we know as Kundalini. So, in my introduction, I basically just tried to describe that the previous session we talked about the electromagnetic field in the body, which of course we try to describe in math and music in the equivalent of what happens at the level of sound, where we can more easily recognize it. But now we are looking at that electromagnetic field not in the form of cycles, but in the form of fractals and lines and of charge discharge. And that's where we can then connect that to the principle of the Kundalini. So Hank, maybe you could just start by recapitulating what the Kundalini is, and why at the end of the last session You said we need to look at that connection between the cyclic breathing, the Merkaba, which you explained in the previous session, and the Kundalini.
Yeah, indeed. So yeah, it's a good question. What's Kundalini? And then I have to say I don't know, because it looks a very simple system in the beginning, and I shall explain it that simple system. It almost looks linear, but then when it comes to a certain level and it starts to transmute, then all of a sudden it's completely Kairos, and let's say it Holy Spirit, it transmutes in Holy Spirit, and then Holy Spirit comes down and transforms again in Kundalini, etc., etc., just to give it a few names that people can relate to easily.
Well, the name Kairos is something many people cannot relate to, so you'll need to explain that.
Okay, so in the Greek times, we had Chronos, that we know that as Saturn, we know that as the clock. But the clock, was not so precise. So the clocks are just, since 1600, the clocks became more precise within 15 minutes or something like that. So before that, people all lived in Kairos time, because that's a world without clocks. You see the sun going up, going down, and you relate to that. So in Japan, they have even made clocks with this to work with it. So in the winter we have short days. In Japan they have more or less the same length of day as we have. So they decided to give in the summer you have 12 hours of light. Imagine 12 hours of light. So then an hour takes about double the time. It's like 1 hour in summer, and the same hour, because the day was short, and the shortest day, then you had only an hour of 35 minutes. And so they put a little metal piece in the clock, so he started to run differently. So you had this all these different hours on the same clock. So after 1 month, you had to put a pin in another. So you get after 1 month, you got a different time, and that was related with the length of the daylight. But also the length of daylight was also always 12 hours, or 12 tokos, as they called it. And you had 12 tokos of the night and 12 tokos of the day. And that was always the same. And that's more or less related also to Kairos. But Kairos is much, much more than only time. Kairos is a different way of... where do you put your consciousness and your awareness? So we have a Chronos consciousness in Western society, or almost every day, everywhere where nowadays. So there is only Chronos, you could say. Only a musician, they play music in Kairos, because if they play in Chronos, they are like typists. They are just like playing on the computer, but that's not music. That's computing. That's not making music. Music that's playing, making the things a little longer, a little shorter. Although on paper they are exact the same length. And I did also some study of the around 1600, and there you have the Leiden choir books, and they also have this same benadering. What's the benadering?
Approach
in music. So they sing with the tide book, the tide, says, from the ebb and flute.
The ocean tides, yes.
The ocean tides, yeah. And so they make music on it. So it's much more related to, for instance, the ragas, the 144 ragas of the Indian music, So it's fascinating that it was in the old music before 1700. It was in before the Baroque music. We had also this Kairos motif completely related to the music. So in winter time, at night, you played the Matthäus Passion. It took 5.5 hours in winter time. In summertime, you would play it in half the time. So that was their approach to give an example of how people lived, and that's for certain not stupid. We are the donkeys. We are the stupid assholes with the clock on our back, pushing us in the things we must do, etc. And they, although they lived in difficult times, but and we are lucky that we are not on boats in the Mediterranean Sea. So it just depending on the place where you are, if you are lucky or not lucky, if you have or not have, where are you born, etc. And that's also a matter of time. So Cronus is always in the end, Cronus is right and Kairos is wrong, but that's not the truth. Kairos is right and Cronus is wrong, but the way we think, the way we approach science, we say, okay, Cronus is right because we can calculate. The problem with Kairos is we can't calculate it properly. We don't have these mathematical equations to do so. We have not our mathematical thinkers who are able to do so. Although they did some things in the early 1900s when they started with quantum thinking and etc. So indeed that also happened. But the whole point with quantum science is that it's very difficult to relate to in mathematical repetitive system, because there is a repetition, but it's not a fractal repetition. It's not a fractal repetition because fractals are also linear repetitions. And although we see a lot of fractal things going on in nature, and if you look more precisely, then even I did some study on the work of Melly Aldert, who made a lot of comparisons between all those lines of time and existence in seconds, in days, in months, and the festivities that we organize through the years, through lifetime. So it's funny to see, but these are all more or less Kairos related things. But we put it more or less in Cronus. But if you see it on a longer lifespan, then you see, yeah, but that's not exactly. Hey, you cannot, just like when you have this, what is the schrikkeljaar in it, Engels?
A leap year.
A leap year. So we have also the leap year. And then computing doesn't work all of a sudden anymore. And also this leap year is not really chronically precise, but they did math very well, those Romans. It's quite an astonishing thing if they could do this 2,000 years ago and we're still using it, and it seemed to be more or less precise. So that's also Cronus relating. But for you as a listener, it's easier to understand Kairos if you just listen to the beats and you put your attention between the beats. And then all of a sudden you feel Kairos coming in. So your parasympathetic nerve system is responding to this pulse. All of a sudden you start to relax and you start to produce different kinds of hormones. And just by putting your attention somewhere else than on this stupid beat, although the beat is not stupid, but we are so stupidly trained to listen only to the beat, but there's so much space between it and we don't feel we have any space. Oh, that's because we put our attention completely on the beat. And then you have, like, you have a landscape and you have all kinds of trees in it, and you run through the landscape, but all the time you bump to a tree, and there's space enough between the trees. But we are so stupid that we, stupid donkeys, we always run right through the tree, bonk our head, say, "Oh, we can't go any further." And there's so much space between those trees, and we are trained on school to be to act that stupid. If we are trained in math or in chemistry, we are also trained that stupid. And then we need to turn our thinking around. And then we say, "Oh, that's between your ears, and you get crazy from it, and you have to start drugs to get there." Yeah, that's very stupid to use drugs to get there.
Yeah, There. I'd like to make a link because what you're presenting here is something which people would know in a slightly different way if they're operating in the field of science.
Yeah.
Because what you describe as Chronos is what in scientific environment would be called classical science. It has a fixed rigidity. It is considered to be material, inert, invariant, and in that same way, in science, you have the relativistic approach, which is in relationship to something that is moving. So, where you have Chronos as classical, and Kairos as relativistic, then you can have this connection, which we also could call as the relationship between Euler system and the Lagrangian system. It is a mathematical approach in which you can then have either a fixed frame of reference, which is called the Euler frame of reference, which is used in Chronos, a fixed clock rate. Or the Lagrange system of references is moving along. So it's a variable system of reference. You could compare it to somebody who's sitting by the river and seeing somebody on the surfboard come by, or the other perspective, the person who's sitting on the river or on the surfboard and can then be seen in relationship to what's happening already on that river.
Yeah.
And it is really relevant what you said, that we have that relationship in music and that people forget about how that works. Because it's in that interaction that you then can see that people are lost in being determined by clock time, which comes from outside, or that they are operating by a logical time, which operates from the inside.
Yeah.
And that, in fact, is one of the main causes of diseases, and also one of the reasons why I started with this whole project of mathemusics, to understand how we can better get a grasp on that rift that appears within us when, let's say, clock time starts to interfere with cell cycles. And it is very beautiful that you bring that up just now in this approach, this description. In which you make that explicit distinction between Chronos and Kairos, or with between clock time and biological time. Let's come back to this notion of Kundalini. You said Kundalini is very difficult to describe, and you said one of the reasons is that we need to look at Kundalini in from two perspectives. You've now explained that those two perspectives are basically the objective outsider look in clock time and Chronos, and the opposite, the subjective internal cell cycle time of Kairos. And in that sense, we can see that Kundalini is related to the cell cycle in the cell, and it is also related to the way the body is constructed. So that when we look at the first cell and it divides and divides again and again and again, then you see that that forms a fractal. You can also see that the rhythm of the first cell cycle of the zygote then gets partitioned up approximately equally between the next two cells. And then again for the cells that follow out from that after. And it results in a body with cells operating at different cycles, at different rates. But then that is all explicable, because if you see that it is a time fractal, then you can see that the first cell basically exists like a straight line in time. At the moment of cell division, that cell line divides and you have two timelines of the next cells that come out of that, and they may be slightly skew with respect to each other. One may be a bit faster, the other may be a bit slower, and then you get the next cell divisions, and again there is a bifurcation, a splitting of that timeline. As a result of which, the timeline fractal will be uneven, just like what you would see in the plants, where the branch the one way and the branch in the other would not always be of equal size. And it results in a cell system in which the cell cycles will then be uneven, but all of them interrelated. And the relationship between them is always by the time fractal, which exactly maps how when the first cell starts, when it divides, and there's a straight line between that. Even though it might be going faster and slowing in Chronos time, in Kairos time, it would be line. But that, of course, gives the direct relationship between that fractal of cell division decisions and the principle that we know is Kundalini. Because when you look at the way the body is formed out of the first cell, the zygote, then essentially in the earlier forms of development, you can see that it builds what is called a notochord, which is the early onset of the spinal cord, which has the shape of a worm, which sort of folds open and folds out and turns inside out while it does that. It is a topological inversion dynamic. But you can also see that in that growth process, essentially, the cell which starts at the bottom ends up at the top, even though it is connected by the decisions and the divisions of the cell cycles. So that this first initial worm-shaped notochord of the primordial spinal cord of our body is the basis of what people in India and elsewhere call Kundalini. And in that sense, you can then say that the bottom of the Kundalini, or the bottom of the spinal cord, is the origination point of that first cell. But when that cell divides and again, again, and again, and again, it's sort of pushed upwards while the divisions take place, so that that first cell ends up at the same time at the far end of that notochord, of the spinal cord. In fact, it ends up as the pineal gland in our brain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in that sense, you then have a very clear understanding that the Kundalini is a linear trail or a linear trace of the first cell leading to the core cell in our consciousness of perception in the pineal gland. Mm-hmm. While at the same time, that first cell in a different way still exists at the base of the spine.
Yeah.
And that is the description which has been given in Indian lore, in Indian traditional subjective science, that the Kundalini system is basically the trace of that first cell forming the last cell, or that the bottom of the spine and the top of the spine are connected by that fractal, but also that when you go up that fractal system of the spinal cord, or as it is then called, the Kundalini, you can see that there are 8 stages of development. So there are 8 levels of divisions, of types of divisions, of different complexities of divisions that take place in the body. And in the Kundalini system, you can then see that there are 8 chords in that notochord, and those 8 chords are then called the chakras.
Yeah.
So the bottom one, the root chakra, essentially represents the single cell system. The second chakra, the sexual chakra, is basically the double cell system, which is also related to inside, outside, but also male and female as experiences sexuality.
Yeah.
The third level is actually the equivalent of a three-cell system, where you then have this possibility of the change between the one and the other with the mediation in between. So at the level of the Hara, or the Dantian, as it's called in Chinese, below the gut, just below the navel, you have that system where you see that the gut is basically a dynamic of turning inside out. So where at the second level of the Kundalini system, at the second chakra, you would have the inside and the outside. At the third level, you actually see that there is a dynamic which links them, which is a dynamic of turning inside out, for which the whole of the gut is a representation. It's the worm system within our body. When you then go to the next chakra, which is the solar plexus, which is the fourth chakra, then you can see that the fourth level comes in, and basically you go from a triangular system to the tetrahedral system, and the principle of turning inside out is actually given shape. You then have the inside and the outside, basically what you would find in an eggshell. Mm-hmm. And then you can see that in the solar plexus, the body system has been created with the capacity to maintain its internal circulation. So that where first you have the one cell system at the bottom, you have the two cell system in the second chakra, you have the three cell system in the Hara, the Dantian, below the navel, then you have the four cell system at the solar plexus, but that is where the system as a whole can stabilize itself and can turn inside out on itself. That's essentially where we go from the vegetative system at the third level to the animal system at the fourth level. That system then repeats itself at the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth chakra nodes of the Kundalini, because that is where we then have the information process of the same. So at the fifth level, we were basically concerned with the timing of the breathing in and the breathing out, but also of the heart circulation in the body, which is the equivalent of the tidal zone in the on the planet. Then at the fifth, at the sixth chakra, which is the throat chakra, we are dealing with the relationship between the head and the body, which is a circulation between the part and the whole, which is the equivalent of, let's call it the hydraulic circulation on the planet, but also the food chain on a planet in which everything feeds everything else, and the part is related to the whole. So it's a Möbius loop of the information flow by which everything is connected. Then in the seventh chakra, which is associated with the forehead or the pineal gland, essentially it is the hypothalamus, or rather the connection between the two, the hypophysis, where you can then see that we are actually able to relate the part and the whole, for front brain and back brain. And make our choices which determine our life. And at the eighth chakra node, at the crown chakra, you see the function of the pineal gland itself, which is the representation of the whole in the part. So then you can see that in the Kundalini, which is that development from the first cell forming the body as a whole, there are these eight stages which are now describable in terms of a one cell, two cell, three cell, four cell, five cell, six cell, seven cell, and eight cell system, but also in the principle of the octave, that the first cell at the start, where we have oneness, and the eight cell system at the top, where we have the octave, is actually a repetition or a replication of the same concept. And so that is where we then have that principle that the Kundalini is at the same time a fractal, because it goes from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 to 8. But at the same time, it is something else, because we are not really dealing with cells at that level, but we are rather dealing with dimensions. So the first four steps is the transition from one-dimensional to two-dimensional to three-dimensional to four-dimensional, which is basically from a point to a line to a plane to a volume. So that's why something has to be formed as a whole, while the second set of four chakras does the same at the level of the information integration. So that's why you see that it's not a form, but a forming, which determines what happens in the body. So at the bottom, for the form, you would say that would be in Kronos time. It is the fixed relationship of the forming of the body. But the second layer would be in Kairos time, because it would be the relationship of timing of the part versus the whole.
Yeah.
And then you can see that the where the first four dimensions or the first four chakras are related to the structural integration of the body in its context, then the second four chakras are about the process dynamic of the body in the context. So the fifth chakra is about the social relationship, the feeling. The sixth chakra is about the expression, the freedom of expression, communication in the context. So that's all in the space between us. And then the seventh chakra is about the world image that we make about the environment that works around us. And the eighth is the realization that it all boils down to of us as a creator in creation. And that's why the Kundalini in the Indian lore is so very important, because it is this lattice or this trellis by which you can see how the form of the body is created, but at the same time you can see how it is related to formation. It's not just about time, it's also about timing. It's not about a matter, but it's also about materialization. And that's why for people in the West it has often been difficult to understand what was being described by the Kundalini system. But since 100 years ago, that difficulty has been resolved, mainly as a result of the import of ideas from the East and the Far East into the West, by the translation of the Jesuit text, which have been brought in based on the original Indian and Chinese description. And as a result, classical science was able to transform into the theory of relativity, quantum theory, and field theory. So we had this change from clock time to process time. Classical clock time, basically deterministic, one rule for everything. Let's call it the idea of the Vatican and the Pope. Domination, the idea of the Lord, either as the Pope or as an imagined God, while in the Chinese system it was always relativistic. And that's what happened 100 years ago with Einstein, that relativity was explicitly formulated in Western science, as a result of which there was this immediate connection also with if things are relative, then you can also reverse the direction. And that is what then was expressed in the formulation of quantum theory or probability theory. If you had the choice between the one and the other, then you also have the choice between the other and the one. And that is basically then a quite strict formulation of the Kundalini system. So where you said, well, we're not very clear on what Kundalini is. Yeah, indeed, if you follow the Western interpretation of the Eastern tradition, it tends to be very fuzzy and complex, but that complexity arises mainly because of that confusion or that distinction which exists, which you have related to before, in the relation between Kronos and Kairos. And so when you try to look at the Kundalini from a discrete perspective, it doesn't make sense, because it is not a form. It is a process of forming. You cannot describe Kundalini in an Euler or classical framework. You need to understand Kundalini in a relativistic Lagrange framework. And then it becomes quite simple, because then you can in our body see that it is the principle of cell divisions leading to these eight layers of complexity, which in music we would call the octave. And that's where I would like to bring the story back to you, because that is where you said in the previous session that we need to now look at the relationship between this cycle of breathing and this seemingly linear system of the Kundalini.
Yeah. Yeah, so the point is, my client comes in a half hour earlier, so I have to start with my client. So can we do that the next time?
Okay, let's do that the next time then.
Yeah.
And basically you already said that there is a strong parallel between what happens in the energy system in our body and what we see as the money system in the environment.
Yeah.
So next time I'll just leave it up to you if you want to connect it to,
yeah,
so that we do the biology of the human in the terms of math and musics, with the Kundalini system and the breathing cycle, and that we do the financial equivalent of the same, which then applies to socionomics later.
I think it's smarter to expand a little bit more on this. Because I think that's very basically what happens in all those layers, what you see in the Kundalini, you see in the chakras, and you see it in the cells, and you see it also in the money system.
Okay, so next time we'll just do the sequel of the story and connect the Kundalini with the breathing circle.
Yeah.
And then also see how it works out in society.
And also with the the vertical and the horizontal, the front and the sides, and so that we make it a whole picture of this Kundalini energy running through our body. What happens when it reaches through the pineal gland and creates something what we can call a blessing or Holy Spirit or whatever, and how that. And that's a Kairos thing, coming back to your system where the insight goes out and comes in again. So that's a very curious thing, and that's all within the system more or less. Although this thing outside your pineal gland, we say it's outside, but I see it as more as an insight. And that's also what happens with music. So music is not as much for the cells, but it's more for the stuff that's above your head and that you're not aware of, and then it has the ability to come in, and that you suck this information in. But that's for another time.
I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kronos and Kairos.
Yeah.
So you go back to the other world timing, and we leave the rest of the story for next time.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Bye-bye.
Thank you again.
See you.
Bye-bye.